Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So I decided recently that it was time, or it would be a good idea, because I'm involved in a ugly tenancy dispute at the moment regarding landlord remediation stuff, and it's very ugly. But there has been so far a couple of instances in which things that were said were denied being said. And I mentioned that Israel is a one-party recording jurisdiction, which means that if you're party to a conversation, you can record it without notifying the other person. And I mentioned, or I emphasized in another episode, that this is not something that I recommend people do casually, but that in certain circumstances, as a protective mechanism, I think it's very important. And a DVR is a great tool that I have a lot of fondness for from my early days dabbling in journalism. It's a voice recorder that is kind of dinosaur technology, sadly, because now smartphones can do it. And I remember there was certainly a point in time at which journalists would, I told my wife that one of my voice recorders, the one that's being replaced, recorded the Irish Prime Minister. It's a very famous voice recorder, but I'm sure any journalist with the DVR has done a lot more, has done a lot of interviews with it. And they're great. They're very reliable. You can plug in an external microphone. And I decided that because mine is so old and it has an old connector, I'm going to get a new one. So I just purchased a Sony DVR. They have a good name, and I'm looking forward to. I think it's a good thing to have if you find yourself having to defend reality, which we've talked about before. But in the course of looking for voice recorders, because it's kind of an obscure tech now, 90% of the results came from spy stores. Sometimes these were called gimmicky names like Dr. Spy or Spy Store. And it was kind of confusing to me what these were. On the one hand, you know, because there's kind of this gimmicky market. The spy gear or consumer purchasable spy gear is kind of the ultimate gimmick, right? It's kind of ridiculous. But when I was looking through these listings, I realized, wait, this is definitely not gimmick prices. Going up to $3,000-$4,000 easily for some of the very high-end disguised recorders and disguised video recorders. Video recorders costing more. But what really struck me more than being confused about the who is this for, was the sheer breadth of ways in which humans have thought about ways to disguise recorders. This is actually in the news at the moment in Israel because we had a tragedy involving a daycare center where a number of children died. And it very clearly to me, looking through these listings, one of the most recurrent messages is recorders for daycare. And I asked my wife, in all innocence, why on earth would people want to, I mean, they're not selling these to, God forbid, sexual predators or something awful like that. It's for concerned parents. But I genuinely asked my wife, what's the worry? Why would you possibly want to, you know, put in a disguised recorder? And she said it's his parents are distrustful of what's happening in the nursery, or you know, allegations of misconduct. So I'll leave my thoughts about that for another day. But the in Israel, it was kind of comical, actually. I found an undercover a voice recorder embedded in a Jewish skullcap. There was one embedded in a mezuzah in Jewish homes. But then there was literally everything else that you could think of. So the commonality for these undercover voice recorders is plausible deniability. You want to put it somewhere that it seems natural, it's on your body. So you have dummy cigarette lighters. And I was looking at these and I was kind of like, this is kind of ingenious because, I mean, if you're a PI or working in law enforcement and you want to sort of grab evidence, you have to be close to the person. It has to be context natural. So, you know, they thought of everything. Like you can, you know, go outside for a smoke and your lighter has a voice recorder. What else? USB sticks, keys, you name it. So there was the Jewish specific ones here. And again, I was just thinking of the context that this is useful in, right? They're clearly finding ways, or there is a demand for these products. What was also interesting to me was that we have a specific plug in Israel. It's got three prongs. It's used only here in the world. And there was dummied plugs, which were recorders or voice recorders or video recorders. Now, those are not going to be useful anywhere else on the planet. But clearly, it's profitable enough for these companies to produce these for domestic investigations. So these spy stores, where I ended up buying a voice recorder from, weren't just catering to kind of a novelty market. But nevertheless, there was a strange mixture of very high-end gear and random generic Chinese gear. That really surprised me. The other question I have, or a question I have really, Herman and Corin, is some of this stuff, when you get in, the smaller it is, the more expensive it becomes, because the things I was buying, a voice recorder has a lot of applications, and it's a thing that fits in your pocket. It's not intended to be miniaturized or disguised, but some of these things were the size of a fingernail, and that's where it was very pricey. And I was thinking to myself, how on earth could you compact good electronics into that? Because assuming that these $2,000 products are being sold to trade, by which I mean private investigators, the material collected has to be court admissible. Chain of custody requirement and quality requirement, right? You can collect stuff that is garbled audio or grainy video. So it has to be good in miniature, which is a very, very hard combination to meet. And the power supply question is an extraordinary challenge, right? Where you have just a tiny space to compact any kind of power. So I wonder how these tools do it. I wonder who's buying Herman and Corin, besides, in assuming, of course, lawful use in one party jurisdiction. And maybe for another episode, but when you think about bugging, we're getting very close to bugging here. And I believe some of these were actually bugging devices. And that, I just want to clarify, is not legal. One party jurisdiction. So don't bug your neighbors, and remote recording things like eavesdropping tech. And I don't really understand how that can be sold, because it seems to me there's no lawful reason to use it. But in any event, these things for exfiltrating the data, right? If you are putting a long acting recorder in a property, you have to think of some way to get it out. So that's maybe you may not be comfortable talking about this aspect of it, I understand, because we're getting into use that's only lawful in very narrow contexts, most of which would fall into law enforcement. But how the data is actually generally, when this is done lawfully within the context, let's assume, of law enforcement, what is the usual exfiltration mechanism? Is it, you know, they have a SIM card tray and they just upload it via cellular, or they rely upon physical access, which brings with it the need for warrants and physical access to a building. So Herman and Corin, I think that really exhausts my supply questions about the world of these hidden recorders. I will finish with one observation, that when I went looking for my voice recorder, I didn't find one spy store. In a tiny country like Israel, I was surprised to find about 20. There is clearly a big demand for this. There's clearly a lot of people buying. Oh, one last question. Sorry, guys. Is this the clearly PIs are buying from these groups? Do police buy from them as well? I always assumed police, law enforcement, and anyone else would have their own domestic capabilities, because very risky, it would seem to me, to trust a supplier. But of course, it's going to vary by jurisdiction. Anyway, Herman and Corin, over to you. Let's talk about the hidden, the many ways in which humans have found imaginative ways to disguise recorders, and who's buying these things besides worried parents.
Hey, Herman. Welcome back to the living room studio. I hope you're ready for a deep dive today, because our housemate Daniel sent us a prompt that is honestly a little bit paranoid, but also fascinating.
Herman Poppleberry at your service, Corin. And yeah, I heard Daniel talking about this earlier. He is dealing with that messy tenancy dispute, right? Landlord issues are the worst, but it led him down this incredible rabbit hole of digital voice recorders and spy stores.
It really did. He was telling me about how Israel is a one-party recording jurisdiction, meaning if you are part of the conversation, you can legally record it without telling the other person. That is a huge deal for someone in a legal dispute. But what caught his eye was that when he went to find a simple digital voice recorder or a DVR, he ended up on these websites for high-end spy gear.
It is a wild market. You would think in the age of the smartphone, the humble digital voice recorder would be extinct. We all have a recording device in our pockets 24/7. But as Daniel found out, there is a massive industry for dedicated, disguised recording tech. He mentioned seeing recorders hidden in everything from skullcaps and cigarette lighters to USB sticks and even electrical plugs.
And even a mezuzah, which is so specific to where we are living here in Jerusalem. It makes sense, right? If you want to record a conversation naturally, you need something that blends into the environment. But Herman, what really struck Daniel, and what I want to dig into with you, is the engineering. How do you take a high-quality microphone, a processor, storage, and a battery, and shove it into something the size of a fingernail while making sure the audio is actually good enough to be used in court?
That is the multi-thousand-dollar question. And I mean that literally. Some of these devices Daniel saw were priced at $3,000 or $4,000. Let us start with the miniaturization of the audio components. The heart of these tiny recorders is something called a MEMS microphone. That stands for Microelectromechanical Systems. These are tiny microphones etched directly onto silicon chips. They are the same tech used in your smartphone, but the high-end spy versions use specialized acoustic chambers and high signal-to-noise ratio sensors tuned for incredible sensitivity and low-noise floors.
Okay, so the mic is small, but what about the processing? If you're recording in a cigarette lighter, you do not have a lot of room for a cooling fan or a massive motherboard.
Exactly. These devices use what we call system-on-a-chip or SoC architecture, or even more specialized, ASICS application, specific integrated circuits. Everything is on one tiny piece of silicon, the analog-to-digital converter, the storage controller, and the power management. The real challenge, though, is the storage. Even though NAND flash memory has become incredibly dense, you still need a way to manage that data without a lot of power. Most of these high-end devices record in uncompressed formats like PCM or WAV because compressing audio into an MP3 in real time actually takes more processing power and drains the battery faster.
That is counterintuitive. You would think smaller files would be better for a tiny device.
For storage space, yes. But for battery life, no. Compression is a mathematical heavy lift. If you have enough flash storage, which is cheap and tiny these days, it is actually more efficient to just write the raw data to the memory. And that brings us to the power supply, which Daniel was specifically curious about. How do you power a recorder hidden in a USB stick for 10 or 20 hours?
Right, because if the battery dies halfway through the meeting, the whole thing was for nothing.
Most of these use custom lithium polymer batteries, often called pouch cells. They can be manufactured in almost any shape. Think of a battery that is as thin as a piece of cardboard. In a USB stick recorder, the engineering is actually quite clever because the device can draw parasitic power from the computer it is plugged into to charge itself and then use that tiny internal cell when it is unplugged. But the real secret to long life in these tiny devices is something called VOS, or voice-operated switching.
I have seen that on my old recorders. It just stops recording when it is quiet, right?
It is a bit more sophisticated in the spy gear. The device stays in a deep sleep mode where only a tiny low-power circuit is listening. When the sound hits a certain decibel threshold, it wakes up the main processor in milliseconds. This allows a device with a battery the size of a coin to sit in a room for weeks and only record when people are actually talking. Some of the newest 2026 models even use AI on the chip to filter out background noise like air conditioners before the recording even starts.
That makes a lot of sense. But here is the thing that Daniel brought up that I think is really important for his situation. Admissibility. If he uses a tiny recorder hidden in a cigarette lighter to record his landlord, how does he prove in court that the audio has not been tampered with? Is there a difference between a cheap $20 USB recorder from a big online retailer and a $3,000 professional device?
A huge difference, Korn. And this is where the professional gear earns its price tag. High-end devices often include digital signatures or cryptographic hashing at the point of capture, usually using the SHA-256 algorithm. The moment the audio is recorded, the device generates a unique mathematical fingerprint for that file. If even one bit of that audio is changed later, the hash will not match, and a forensic expert can prove the file was altered.
So it is like a digital wax seal on the recording.
Exactly. Plus, the professional devices usually record in a higher bit depth, like 24-bit audio. Most cheap recorders are 16-bit. 24-bit gives you a much higher dynamic range, which is critical if someone is whispering or if there is a lot of background noise. If you are in a courtroom and the judge cannot hear what the person is saying because of the static, it does not matter if the recording is legal or not. It is useless.
That leads into the second part of Daniel's question about data exfiltration. He was wondering if these things use SIM cards to send audio over the cellular network, or if you have to physically get the device back. I imagine that depends on whether we are talking about a recorder or a bug.
That is a very important distinction. ADVR, or digital voice recorder, is a store and forward device. You have to physically retrieve it to get the data. These are generally safer for the user because they do not emit any radio frequency signals. They are electronically silent. A bug, on the other hand, is a transmitter.
And if it is transmitting, it can be found.
Exactly. If you have a bug hidden in an electrical plug that is sending audio over a GSM or LTE network using a SIM card, anyone with a basic RF detector can find it in seconds. That is why professional investigators often prefer the disguised recorders Daniel was looking at. You plant it, you let it record to an internal micro SD card, and you pick it up later. There is no signal for a counter-surveillance team to sweep for.
But that requires physical access twice, once to plant it and once to retrieve it. That seems risky.
It is very risky. That is why the high-end versions Daniel saw in those Jerusalem spy stores are often disguised as everyday objects that are meant to be moved around. A USB stick left on a desk, a pen in a pocket, or even a functional wall charger. If it is something that belongs in the environment, the risk of discovery is much lower. Some of the really advanced ones now use what is called burst transmission. They record locally to a memory chip and then, once a day at 3 in the morning, they wake up and transmit the entire day's audio in a few seconds over Wi-Fi or cellular. It is much harder to detect a 5-second burst than a continuous stream.
That is incredibly sophisticated. It feels like we are talking about James Bond tech, but Daniel found this in a commercial store. Who is actually buying this stuff? He mentioned worried parents and daycare centers, which is a really heavy topic here in Israel lately.
It is. There have been some tragic cases of abuse in nurseries that were only uncovered because parents hid recording devices in their children's clothing or toys. It is a heartbreaking use case, but it drives a lot of the demand for these ultra-miniature recorders. Beyond that, you have private investigators, corporate espionage consultants, and people in high-stakes legal disputes like Daniel.
What about law enforcement? Do they just walk into the same store and buy a recorder hidden in a skullcap, or do they have their own secret labs?
It is a mix. For routine operations, law enforcement agencies often buy from the same high-end commercial suppliers. There are companies like Nagra or specialized firms in Europe and Israel that cater specifically to the professional market. These are not the shops you see on the street with neon signs saying Dr. Spy, but they are commercial entities. However, for high-stakes national security stuff, agencies definitely have internal technical service divisions that custom-build devices into specific objects for a particular operation. They might even use non-linear junction detectors to ensure their own offices aren't being bugged by the same tech they're using.
I remember we talked about this a bit in episode 276 when we were looking at covert evidence gathering. The tech is always a step ahead of the detection.
It is a constant arms race. As soon as someone develops a better way to hide a microphone, someone else develops a better way to find the silicon in the wall. But for someone like Daniel, the commercial stuff is more than enough. He just needs something reliable that can sit on a table during a meeting with his landlord and capture clear, unassailable audio.
It is interesting that he mentioned the price difference between the generic stuff and the professional gear. He saw things for a few thousand dollars and things for $50. If you are just a regular person, how do you even know if you are getting ripped off?
You have to look at the specifications, but more importantly, the build quality. The cheap stuff usually has a very high noise floor. If you listen to a recording from a $20 USB stick, you will hear a constant hiss. That is the electronic noise from the cheap components. Professional gear uses shielded components to prevent that interference. Also, look at the clock. A professional recorder has a highly accurate internal clock, so the metadata timestamps are frame accurate. In a legal setting, if your recording says it was made at 2 p.m., but the landlord can prove he was at the gym at 2 p.m. because your recorder's clock drifted, your evidence is toast.
That is a great point. Accuracy is everything in a dispute. I actually want to go back to the Israel-specific stuff Daniel mentioned. The mezuzah recorder blew my mind. For those who do not know, a mezuzah is a small parchment scroll in a decorative case that Jewish people place on their doorposts. It is literally everywhere here. You would never think twice about seeing one.
It is the perfect hide. It is always there, it is near the entrance where people talk, and nobody ever touches it. It is a great example of what we call environmental naturalism in surveillance. You want the device to be part of the furniture. In a different country, it might be a smoke detector or a thermostat. Here, it is a mezuzah or a kippah.
Daniel was also asking about the ethics of these spy stores. It feels a bit dirty, right? Selling tools for eavesdropping. But then you think about those parents trying to protect their kids, or a whistleblower trying to prove corruption. It is a gray area.
It is a very gray area. These stores are essentially selling power. The power to know what is being said when you are not in the room, or the power to hold someone accountable for their words. In a one-party consent jurisdiction, it is a legal tool. But as Daniel noted, if you use these things to bug a room where you are not present, that is a felony in most places, including here. The line between a legal recording and illegal wiretapping is very thin, and it mostly comes down to whether you are a participant in the conversation.
Right, and that is a warning we should probably echo for Daniel. Just because you can buy a recorder hidden in an electrical plug doesn't mean you can legally use it to listen to your neighbors.
Exactly. Use it for your own meetings, protect yourself, but don't cross that line into eavesdropping. The tech is fascinating, though. The fact that we can now store hundreds of hours of high-fidelity audio on a chip the size of a grain of rice and power it with a battery as thin as a sticker is a testament to how far materials, science, and microelectronics have come.
It really is. I think we should take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about the future of this tech. Are we moving toward a world where everything is a recorder, and what does that mean for privacy in public spaces?
That is a big one. Let us dig into the second order effects.
All right, we are back. Herman, before the break, we were talking about the engineering of these tiny recorders, but I want to pivot to the practical takeaways for someone like Daniel. If he actually goes through with this and buys a professional recorder to deal with his landlord, what are the actual steps he needs to take to ensure that audio is useful? It is not just about hitting record, right?
Not at all. There is a whole protocol for what we call digital forensics. If Daniel wants this to stand up in a tenancy tribunal or a court, he needs to treat that recording like a piece of physical evidence. Step one is the original media. You should never edit the original file. The moment you get the recording, you make a bit-for-bit copy, and you lock the original device or the SD card away. You only work with the copies.
And what about the environment? If he is wearing a recorder hidden in a pen or a button, does he need to worry about the sound of his own clothes rubbing against the mic?
Oh, absolutely. Clothing noise is the number one killer of covert recordings. Professional pee is often used what they call a windsock or a tiny piece of foam over the mic, even inside the disguise, to dampen that friction. If you are using a disguised device, you need to test it in different positions. If it is in your pocket, is the fabric too thick? If it is a pin, does it rattle when you move? These are the tiny details that separate a successful recording from a mess of static.
It is also about the placement in the room, right? If he uses one of those disguised wall plugs Daniel mentioned, he needs to make sure it is not behind a couch or near a humming refrigerator.
Exactly. Acoustic shadows are real. If you place a recorder near a hard surface like a glass table, you might get a lot of reflections that make the voice sound boomy or distorted. The best spot is usually at head height in an open area. That is why those mezuzah recorders are so clever. They are usually at eye level right by the door where people stand and talk.
I'm curious about the exfiltration part again. Daniel mentioned the SIM card thing. If he were to use a bug, something that transmits, how does that actually work in terms of receiving the audio? Does he just call the device like a phone?
In many cases, yes. The cheaper cellular bubs are essentially just tiny cell phones without a screen or a speaker. You call the number of the SIM card inside the bug, it auto-answers silently, and you can listen to the room from anywhere in the world. But again, that is highly illegal if you aren't part of the conversation. The more advanced versions use data protocols. They encode the audio and stream it to a secure server. This is much harder to intercept than a standard voice call, which can be picked up by a local cell tower interceptor.
So if you're a high-level professional, you're using encrypted data streams, not just a phone call.
Correct. And you're using frequencies that are less likely to be scanned. Some professional bugs use spread-spectrum technology, where the signal hops between different frequencies hundreds of times a second. Unless you have the key to that hopping pattern, all you hear on a scanner is a tiny bit of background noise.
This all sounds very expensive. Daniel was shocked by the $4,000 price tags. But if you think about the cost of a legal battle or a lost business deal, I guess it's an investment.
It is. And you have to remember that you're not just paying for the hardware, you're paying for the reliability and the stealth. A cheap recorder might have a tiny LED that blinks when the battery is low. In a spy situation, that's a disaster. Professional gear has no lights, no sounds, and no vibration. It is completely inert. You're also paying for the software that allows you to manage the device, set the gain levels, and schedule the recording times.
Let's talk about the spy store phenomenon itself. Daniel mentioned finding 20 of them in a small country like Israel. Why is there such a high density here? Is it just the culture of security, or is it something else?
It's a combination of things. Israel is a global hub for cybersecurity and defense tech, so the expertise is here. But also, as Daniel noted, the legal framework of one-party consent makes these devices much more useful for the average citizen than they might be in, say, California or Germany, where two-party consent is the rule. When the law allows you to record your own life, people want the best tools to do it. Plus, we live in a very high trust, low trust society simultaneously. People are very open, but they also want to verify everything.
That's a great way to put it. Trust, but verify, with a digital recorder in your pocket. I'm also thinking about the shift Daniel mentioned from these dedicated devices to smartphones. He said he told his wife that his old recorder once recorded the Irish Prime Minister. That's a piece of history right there. Do you think the dedicated DVR is actually a dinosaur, as he called it?
For journalists, maybe. A smartphone with a good external mic is a powerhouse. But for the applications Daniel is talking about, the smartphone is a liability. You can't leave your smartphone in a room for 3 days to record a meeting. You can't hide a smartphone in a cigarette lighter. And most importantly, a smartphone is a tracking device. If you're doing covert work, the last thing you want is a device that is constantly pinging cell towers and GPS satellites with your identity attached to it. The dedicated recorder is a dumb device in the best way possible. It has no identity, no connection, and no trail.
That's a really sharp insight. In a world where everything is connected, the most secure device is the one that isn't.
Exactly. It's the air gap of the physical world.
So, for Daniel, if he's going to do this, he should probably look for something that is a dedicated recorder, high bit depth, no wireless connectivity, and disguised as something he would naturally have on him during a meeting. Maybe the USB stick or the pen.
I'd go with the USB stick. It's so common in a professional setting that nobody looks twice at it. You can put it on the table, you can fiddle with it, you can leave it in your laptop. It's the ultimate hiding in plain sight. But he should definitely spend the extra money on a reputable brand. Sony makes some incredible tiny recorders that aren't even spy gear per se. They're just professional tools that happen to be very small.
Daniel mentioned Sony. He said he just bought a new Sony DVR because his old one was getting too ancient. It's interesting that the professional audio world and the spy world overlap so much.
They use the same physics, Korn. You need a good diaphragm, a clean preamp, and a solid analog-to-digital converter. Whether you're recording a prime minister or a shady landlord, the requirements for clear audio are the same.
I think we've given Daniel a lot to think about. From MEM, S microphones, to cryptographic hashing, and the ethics of mezuzah bugs. It's a wild world.
It really is. And it's only going to get smaller and more sophisticated. Imagine when we have AI processors built directly into the microphone that can isolate a single voice in a crowded room in real time. That's the next frontier.
That sounds both amazing and terrifying. Herman, thanks for diving into this with me. I feel like I need to go check my electrical plugs now.
Just in case, right?
Just in case. Before we wrap up, I want to say a huge thanks to Daniel for sending in this prompt. It was a great one, and I hope his tenancy dispute gets resolved without him needing to become a full-time secret agent.
Yeah, good luck with the landlord, Daniel. And to all our listeners, if you found this deep dive into the world of covert tech interesting, please leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It really helps other curious people find the show.
It really does. You can find us at myweirdprompts.com, where we have the full archive of all 280 episodes. We've covered everything from digital archaeology to motorcade security, so there's plenty to explore.
This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
And I'm Korn. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back next week with another weird prompt from our favorite housemate.
Until next time, stay curious and keep your eyes open.
And your ears, especially the ones hidden in the pens.
Exactly. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.